Vin Scully called the 10th inning ground ball in Game 6 of the 1986 World Series Mets versus Red Sox that sealed a comeback, fueled a curse, and turned a battling champion into a scapegoat. But getting there was a long, hard slog with plenty of heartache. After being knocked out of contention the previous two seasons, the Mets blasted through the National League that year. They won blowouts, nail-biters, fights, and a 14-inning game that ended with one pitcher on the mound, another in right field, and an all-star catcher playing third base. Matthew Silverman's new book is 1 Year Dynasty, Inside the Rise and Fall of the 1986 Mets, Baseball's Impossible One-and-Done Champions. He will be at the Low Beat in Albany, right on Central Avenue in downtown Albany, for a happy hour Mets event and book signing. He joins us this morning, and we couldn't be more thrilled to welcome Matthew Silverman to the program. How are you?
I'm doing great, Joe. Thanks.
Very nice. This book seemed like it would have been a lot of fun to put together.
It was a lot of fun to put together, and having grown up with the 86 Mets and to being there beforehand, to really appreciate it, having they had a really down period just before then.
So you have to be a Mets fan to want to take on a project like this, I would think.
It's a good idea, but others have. But it's a popular team, and it remains sort of a touchstone for the Mets all these years later, because they haven't really had that much to crow about since then, except for some sporadic, good moments, which hopefully we're in right now.
Right, but you're a Mets fan.
Yes.
Okay, so that, yes. I mean, that's where you're, because that's a lot of what you've written about, what you've done, it has to do with the Mets.
Yes.
Okay, so before we get to the book, why does Matt Harvey suck so bad?
maybe he's a little tired. Maybe it's the God saying to mellow out a little bit.
Booed off the mound, for goodness sake.
A little hubris, yes. There was on the Twitterverse yesterday, I had left about the same time he did to prepare for this and get some stuff together, and everyone was like, you're not real fans, or this, or Matt Harvey stinks, were the two sentiments that I was seeing there.
Oh, and you don't want to weigh in one way or the other?
I was there for the game 5 against the Royals, and he pitched his heart out, and he hasn't really been the same since. He's been up and down, but, I've seen Dwight Gooden pitch badly, and everyone wondered what was wrong with him. They found out later, but
now,
he still was pretty
know.
Good even then.
And it's early in the season. It's
and
still
it is very,
very
early,
very
in,
early
the season.
In the season. So who knows what's going to happen. I love the idea of this book. I love the title of this book. This is the idea of a one-year dynasty that you just, you can do it all in a year.
Yes, accelerated. And I talked to Rob Nyer, a baseball columnist who wrote a book called Dynasties, and asked him, his book's like 15 years old, but he had the Mets ranked at number 8. And I said, some time's gone by. Would you still have them in the top 10? He said, absolutely. There's nothing there's no other team that's knocked them out of that pedestal. And they're also the only team, I think, in the top 15. And he had all kinds of rating systems and, math and all the good stuff to figure it out. And the Mets were number 8. I think the 39 Yankees were number 1. It was kind of a surprise.
So what was it about this team that allowed these ingredients to play out in the way I described in the introduction?
There was a lot of hubris on that team as well. They also had a bumper crop in the farm system, and it was really fueled in some part by all the lousy teams that they had before then, where they were able to draft Wally Backman, and they drafted Mookie Wilson, and they had an overabundance of prospects, and Frank Cashin, the general manager, was astute enough to figure out which ones were going to be right fits in New York and for what he was trying to build, and he traded off the other ones who were very ballyhooed, et cetera, and brought back the likes of Keith Hernandez and Gary Carter and the little pieces big pieces that they need. And Bob Ojeda came just before the season, and people wondered why they got him, and he ended up being one of the keys to that actual season.
And when we think about it, we were talking about this current team at the beginning of our conversation. So where were they a month or two into the season? The 1986 Mets.
They had just come off of one of the hottest streak the team has ever had. I think they went from 2-3, which the Mets were, ironically, this year.
Yeah.
And they were 2-3 last year when they had an 11-game winning streak. And in 86, they had an 11-game winning streak. And they never looked back after that. They went to St. Louis, won 4 straight games from them. And the Cards essentially said, we won last year. We're not catching them, and nobody was. And by August, the Expos were the closest team. They said they capitulated on the before the month even began.
You say in the book, no matter how great a team is, no one runs away before June, and certainly not in the era of two-division leagues, unless they just keep winning.
And that's exactly what they did. They just bowled through everybody. They didn't play the Expos, were the second closest team, and they were only holding on because they hadn't played the Mets, and they were like 6-7 games back. Once they had 6 games against the Mets, even though they split them, the Mets did so well in the series besides that it was all but over by the 4th of July.
How much do you think, in writing this book and in telling this story, that because it's become legendary at this point. I mean, so there's a lot of stories and there's a lot of myths and a lot of legend too. Mm-hmm. So when you look at what really happened, were there any surprises for you of like, oh, okay, so history shows this?
That they were as good as they were, the stats. Bill James had a thing in his next year's baseball abstract pointing out all the areas that they were so good in and things that now you would figure would be a great team. And they had batting average, on-base percentage, and slugging percentage. They had essentially the best pitching staff. And I knew that Orozco and McDowell pitched a lot and both had 20 saves. But when you look at the amount of times they pitched and how Davey Johnson was able to sort of stagger them in and out for two-inning stints a lot of the time, you just kind of shake your head. And even Davey Johnson said that a lot of the stuff that he did and they did is hard to duplicate today.
And when you look at the team itself, and I think you even point this out in the book, and I'll clean it up for radio, but basically you were looking at a collection of partiers, addicts, and jerks.
There were a lot of that, but I was in college in the 80s, and I have to say there was a lot of them everywhere. And someone sent out a picture last night of a fight in the upper deck, and I felt obliged to tweet back that in the 80s, that wasn't news. That was called Thursday.
Right.
And there was stuff like that going on, in the stands. And it was also, in the clubhouse. There was no Jeff Perlman, who wrote another book on the 86 team, said that in the era of iPhones, they couldn't even do half the stuff that they got away with on a regular basis.
You make the point in the book, the exception to that was Mookie Wilson.
Mookie Wilson was very religious-minded, came from a big family, had totally worked his way up, didn't even play baseball until he went to high school, and was very much on the straight and narrow for most of his life, and hit the ground ball. There's a picture of him of drinking from a giant champagne bottle, which is all a prop because he never, maybe had one sip or two from it, even though he caused probably 10,000 of them to be popped all over the country.
And in a sport filled with great names, Mookie still works out pretty damn
yes.
good.
Yes, Mookie Betts in Boston has it, but you still, I think the original works very very well.
When you think about, I guess I'm interested in sort of the geography of this too, that all of this comes together. Because the Mets are always kind of they also ran to the Yankees, right? I mean, it's the New York's other team, and so then when you have the spotlight, so why not celebrate, right?
Yes, and that they played Boston, which is also the only other
the big rivalry.
It was. I talked to a couple of Yankees fans, and they were very torn. One of them went to the Giants game that night, and only to find that everybody was listening to the game on the radio, and you couldn't even tell what was happening in the football game because people were, had a big portable TVs they brought with them, and were watching it there.
And when you think about what they accomplished, the rise and the fall. So talk to us a little bit about the fall and how all that happened.
Well, the Mets sort of did it Davey Johnson's way and built themselves up very quickly and brought a bunch of rookies in, which doesn't always work. But because Davey Johnson had been the manager, of them in the minor leagues. He picked and chose the one that the ones that he wanted to bring up. Some of them didn't make sense, but ended up being great fits on the team, like such as Wally Backman, and then he brought in Tim Tuffle. And when they went downhill, they immediately started getting rid of players. Kevin Mitchell was the first one, and Mookie Wilson said that when they got rid of him, as well as Ray Knight, who seemed like ancillary players, they ended up losing sort of that intimidator that they had. And those guys that were right in the middle of that 10th inning rally, and Gary Carter was there too, other than Mookie Wilson was probably the cleanest player on the team and the only Hall of Famer.
Let's talk about the event that you're going to be having at the Low Beat. Nobody who knows this place certainly knows anybody who knows this place certainly knows that the proprietor, Howard Glassman, is a huge Mets fan. So what will be going on and how is the evening going to unfold?
We've got a bunch of books there. We're going to talk about the Mets. I think the Mets Brewers game is tonight as well. We'll watch a little of that. We'll talk Mets, and you know, at a bar you kind of have to be, hey, you know, you kind of let the people dictate how you want to do it. If they want book readings, we can do that. We can and ironically ran into Howard and started talking about this. I work at the Tri-City Valley Cats, the closest team here. When I spotted him at a Brooklyn Cyclones game. He went to all three games of that, so he is walking, you know, walking the walk.
Absolutely. And as far as the event gets underway at what time?
6 o'clock.
6 o'clock. 6 o'clock tonight at the Low Beat. It's in downtown Albany, right on Central Avenue. And the book is fantastic. It's really fun. A one-year dynasty inside the rise and fall of the 86 Mets, baseball's impossible one-and-done champions. Matthew Silverman, a great pleasure to have you on the program. Have a great event tonight, and best of luck with the book.
It's a pleasure. Thanks so much for having me.
Thanks very much. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.